This is Circulating Ideas. I'm Steve Thomas. My guest today is Matthew Ngo. He's the Collection Outreach Librarian at the Francis A. Countway Library at Harvard Medical School, and he specializes in graphic medicine. Circulating Ideas is brought to you with support from listeners like you. Find out how you can support the show by going to circulatingideas.com/support. Matthew Ngo, welcome to Circulating Ideas.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So I wanted to get started with, we're going to talk about a few different things, but mostly probably around graphic medicine, and we'll talk about what that is for the listeners and everything. But I wanted to start off with wondering how you became a librarian in the first place.
So I was a philosophy undergrad, and, you know, first-gen student, so I didn't really know what I was getting into, what I was planning on doing. So I got out of undergrad, wound up managing a small restaurant, and then a friend that I met while in undergrad went on to become a librarian himself, working in a medical library, and was like, this is pretty cool, you should check it out. And so I did, started the program having not worked in a library, which I know is taboo for some people. but then, you know, that was 2014. Started grad school, went through it, worked 3 library jobs at a time for 2 years to get as much experience as possible, and graduated in 2016, came up, and I've been doing this ever since.
Yeah, I made the jump. I went from bookstores straight to libraries and right into library school and everything, so it's sometimes you don't have to work in libraries your whole life to become a librarian later.
Absolutely not, yeah.
Can you tell me about your early comic book experiences in your life?
So this is also kind of funny. Before about 2013, I was not a huge comic book reader. I read manga growing up, you know, doing that thing you're not supposed to do and reading scanned prints. I lived in the rural Midwest, so there really wasn't a whole lot of manga to be found. And then, you know, watching like JLA, the cartoon, the great cartoon of the early 2000s. But then in 2013, met my fiance, and she was a comic book reader and introduced me to them. And then I had a crash course in comics over a couple of years before I discovered graphic medicine. And so I've kind of just been reading massive amount of comics ever since.
So, can you tell the listeners what graphic medicine is and then kind of what was your draw to it?
So graphic medicine, this fancy term coined by a physician in the UK, Ian Williams, in 2007 or so. And it basically means, you know, the intersection of the medium of comics and the discourse of healthcare. The layman's term is it's comics that are about healthcare or have healthcare elements to them. This could be anything as complicated as a personal memoir of living with disease to something as innocuous as how medical procedures are portrayed in superhero comics. I found graphic medicine on accident while in grad school. Like I said, I started grad school not having been a librarian before, and I was learning how to do searching in a medical library setting. And I was trying to find radiological images for this physician. I did something really, really wrong and wound up finding graphicmedicine.org, which radiological images are images, but they're not comics. So I'm not sure. I can't repeat what I did.
So, stumbling through the internet.
And I was... this was 2014, so I'd been doing my deep dive into comics, falling in love with it at the same time as I was learning about health literacy and librarianship, and then stumbled upon graphic medicine, where there's a community of people using comics to discuss medicine and combat health illiteracy. So I latched onto it and spent, you know, the later half of graduate school focusing it hard on it, and then my personal time. And so that's how we wound up where we are now.
we talked a little bit before we started recording that my wife is in public health, and so I remember, I don't remember when it was, 10 years ago or something maybe, that CDC put out a comic book that's about using zombies as a way to explain outbreaks.
Yeah.
So it was...
It's one of the rare government-produced comics that actually had a real like professional cartoonist on it. So it's a great example.
Yeah. So what was your first position out of library school? What were you doing when you first got out of library school?
So I graduated May 2016, and I'd been interviewing around and looking for like entry-level jobs, and found out that the University of Massachusetts Medical School, the Lamar Sutter Library, has this fellowship program where they take recent library school graduates and put them in a full-time professional library position, but you're also going through a curriculum specific to medical libraries. Because most medical library or most library school programs don't actually have a whole lot of offerings in specifically medical librarianship.
Right.
And so this program they developed was an attempt to counter that by hiring people and training them on the job. So I started there, you know, a week after graduation, moved from Kentucky to Massachusetts. It was a very quick turnaround, but so it was a perfect job, perfect opportunity for someone new really to the field. And I had a lot of freedom there to, you know, develop my interests. So I was encouraged there to, work in graphic medicine. So we started a small collection with some, you know, end of year collections budgets. Luckily, comic books are relatively cheap if you're buying, you know, one copy of each, especially in a medical school where textbooks are usually hundreds of dollars, whereas a comic is usually about 25. And then applied for, so the research project was part of this job. So I got thrown right into that and applied for a grant to conduct a scoping review, kind of get a mapping view of the landscape of how comics have been used in health education, be it in a medical school, be it with consumers or patients. Finishing that up now, that's been a 2-year project. And it turns out people have been using comics for, you know, decades. There's just hasn't been a whole lot of documentation or mainstream attention to it, like we're seeing now.
And you also you did some work with you made some book club kits.
Yeah. So I was a fellow for the Lamar Sutter Library. That was a full time thing. But so the National Library of Medicine has this this outreach branch called the National Network of Libraries of Medicine. And it breaks the U.S. into regions, New England being one of the regions. And one institution in each region hosts, it's basically a grant, a 5-year grant that the library hires and runs an office out of. And so while I was at Lamar Sutter, that's where the New England region office was. And so part of my time got diverted to work with that group to start a graphic medicine initiative within the national network. This kicked off, I did an introductory webinar targeted to librarians for graphic medicine. And that was also the launch to this book club kit program. So when I was in grad school, I did a fellowship in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and the Ypsilanti Public Library is right around there. And they were awarded a Will Eisner grant from ALA to build a graphic medicine collection. Part of that collection was they made book clubs that these kits that people in that community could check out. They had a few copies of the comic, Say Mom's Cancer. And then they included, you know, materials to run the book club kit with. So someone didn't have to come up with questions. They could just check out the kit and run with it. And I thought this was really cool. And so what I wanted to do was recreate that idea, but on a bigger scale. And so I picked 10 medical topics that are either common conditions or conditions that people have a lot of misconceptions about, and found a comic that matched with them, and created a discussion guide and an introduction to why you would, you know, use comics to discuss health in the first place. And then each of these kits contained 6 books and then a bunch of consumer health information from the National Library of Medicine. The idea was that anyone within the New England region could request to use one of these kits, whether you're a public library, an academic library, a hospital library. Some public schools borrowed them as well to use with their high schoolers. And that was started in March of last year. The last time I looked at the stats before I left that job, they had been lent about 40 times to libraries all across the region and outside of.
So I want to dive a little bit deeper on graphic medicine, but before we do that, I wanted to talk just a little bit about, because you have a newish job at Harvard. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because you mentioned that you just left your other job.
Yeah. So I started here. I'm now the collections outreach librarian at the Countway Library of Medicine at Harvard Medical School. It's kind of a unique position where I'm primarily a collection development librarian, where I'm, you know, responsible for maintaining and updating, you know, all of our collections, but with a particular focus on graphic medicine and the broader medical humanities. So building collections around narrative and arts and communication. There's a whole field about making medicine more humanistic. And so I've got a real focus on that and bringing those collections to Harvard. But the outreach piece is interesting. You don't usually see those thrown together. And so what that is I'm marketing our collections, and I have a specific role to market our collection to the three schools we serve, medical, dental, and public health. But then I'm also going out into the community, finding out specifically what our users want, particularly the students in our collections, how they're using them, and seeing really what we should be having. This is it's a massive project for a library as large as this one, but I'm happy to be doing it.
And do they have a large graphic medicine collection, or is that something that you're able to work on?
So when I got here, our catalog records showed that we had a single comic book in the medical library. It was Mom's Cancer, but no one has seen it, and we can't find it. So it's missing. So they didn't actually have any. But since getting here, I started in February. And so my real first major task was to seed these new collections, because there was no dedicated humanities and medicine collection here either. So in the past few months, I have ordered several hundred comics and even more than that of, you know, narrative medicine and novels and that sort of thing relevant to medicine. And this is a huge library system, so I order them here, and then they go get processed elsewhere and then come back to me. So the comics have started arriving. We're going to have a large last I looked, I've ordered something like 400 comics to seed this collection with, all with some level of relevance to medicine.
All right, well, that leads into what I wanted to talk about, which is, why should libraries collect this material? What do you see as the inherent worth in it?
The answer to that kind of varies based on library, but for me, the real fundamental piece is that it's important for people to see stories about living with illness, because medicine is generally still practiced from a strictly biomedical standpoint, where we're looking at the disease, not the person. We're treating a condition and trying to solve a problem. And a lot of the time, that condition, whether it be lung cancer, a specific kind of lung cancer, or whether it be bipolar disorder, it's looked at as the same in every individual. And that's clearly not the case. So I think these comics open a window into what it's like to live with illness and it gives different perspectives. So instead of the standardized patient, you're seeing four or five different iterations of the same condition and how individuals and the people around them are impacted by that.
Do you have a separate section for those, or are they just integrated in with the rest of the collection?
So controversial take. I understand it.
Yes. I was going to also, the follow-up question was going to be, what's your feeling on that in general in libraries?
Okay. I am a proponent of shelving comics separately. I like to treat them as a separate medium, because I'm of the opinion, this is how I read comics, so your mileage may vary. If I want to read a comic, I know I want to read a comic, and I go look for them. I approach reading a comic book differently than I do a novel. And, you know, they're a different medium. I don't like shelving DVDs with, you know, fiction. So I don't want to shelve comics with nonfiction or with fiction either. And I've been told by many librarians that that's, you know, not necessarily the right way. And I don't know that there is a right way, but I'm sticking to that, particularly in an academic medical library setting. Our stacks are fairly full of these giant monstrosities of textbooks.
Right.
And so comics are going to get lost in there. If I give them a dedicated shelf space, then they're easier to see. The covers can stand out. You can do displays with them. Because that's what attracts people to comics a lot of the times is, you know, don't judge a book by its cover. But we all do, and a cover can draw you in. But it can't draw you in if it's hidden between, you know, two editions of Harrison's Internal Medicine.
Yeah, I always feel bad for cover artists when they, like cover design artists and things like that, when people say that, because it's like, you know, they pay them lots of money to make the cover, help you judge the books.
Yeah. I went on a rant about this on Twitter the other week, because it's common practice in academic libraries to strip the dust jacket off of books.
Right.
There are reasons for this. But in these two collections we're talking about, graphic medicine and humanities, the covers have a lot of personality and value to them. But so I'm getting these books back and there's no cover. Even some of the comics, a lot of modern graphic novels are published with, you know, a dust jacket.
Right.
One in particular, Rosalie Lightning, for example. The copy that's going to go on the shelf is this tan, just plain cover, because the dust jacket was gotten rid of. So it's a little disheartening, but that's a system-wide thing. And maybe there's an argument to change that.
Well, you may have an opportunity to talk about that a little bit. You're going to be doing a panel at ALA this year. Can you talk about what you're going to be doing there?
Yeah, so it's on Saturday, June 23rd at 2:30 in the afternoon. The panel is called Graphic Medicine, Narratives of Illness, Healing, and Care. So I'm actually moderating this panel, and it will be my first time doing so. It's also my first time attending ALA. I generally have avoided the giant conference because huge crowds of people make me a little anxious.
But, may God have mercy on your soul.
I may be a little hyped up on caffeine. When I get anxious, I tend to overindulge in coffee, which I overindulge in anyway. So I'm going to be moderating this panel with three speakers. MK Serwick, she's a co-manager of graphicmedicine.org and a nurse and a cartoonist in her own right, whose book, Taking Turns, Stories from HIV Care Unit 371, is one of my favorite examples of graphic medicine in the whole canon. Then Ellen Forney, who is probably more well-known to everyone in comics at this point, Marvel's is the, you know, it's kind of a standard bearer at this point. But she's mostly going to be talking about her new book, Rock Steady, Brilliant Advice from My Bipolar Life, which I just got a copy of. I haven't had a chance to read yet, but I will before the panel, I promise. It's a follow-up to Marbles, where she's giving, you know, suggestions on managing bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And then Julie Ruchelot, whose last name I'm probably mispronouncing, is a French cartoonist who I am not familiar with yet. I will also be familiar with them before the panel. Is going to be talking about a comic called About Betty's Boob from Boom Studios. It's a narrative about mastectomy. And so we're going to, you know, talk about, you know, graphic medicine as a whole, and the authors will get a chance to discuss their particular approaches to it. Because that's one of my favorite things about this field is everyone comes to health and wellness and illness from a unique perspective. And by putting it out there on page with ink and pencil and paper, they're sharing that perspective with us. And, you know, some people go very realistic, some people go cartoony. And why they make those decisions is something I like to discuss and find out, because that gives more power to it when you're reading it later.
Yeah, I mean, because doing that, especially when it's a writer artist who's doing both things, it can really draw you in a different way of really express the emotion in a different way. I mean, obviously, yeah. You can still do that with a writer artist team, but when it's one person kind of expressing everything together, it's kind of a special thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so everybody make sure if you're going to ALA, go to Matthew's panel. And luckily, it's not the same time as my panel, which is on Sunday at 1. So.
Okay. Well, I'll have to make sure I stick around for Sunday to go to your panel. I'm still trying to decide how long I want to stay, because this panel is my only obligation to attend.
Yeah.
But there's all kinds of comic stuff, so I'm going to try to check it out and meet people that I wouldn't normally get to meet in my library circles. So.
Yeah, and you definitely want to keep open the time to go to the exhibit floor and see, because all the comics publishers will be there, so you can talk to them and see all that stuff. That's always a fun thing to do too. So.
Yeah, and I'm finding new ways to get the books into our collection here. I'm kind of inventing, playing around with how to order comics, because it's not something normally done in this setting.
Right.
So everything is a new adventure.
Yeah, well, I feel like all libraries have trouble with that, because the comic book world was not really designed to create things that would stay on a shelf for a long time and do multiple circulations. And it's worse with the superhero stuff, because it's kind of, there's 8,000 volumes of, like, how do you find Green Lantern number one?
Yeah.
Like, well, there's volume one, issue two, and then there's volume eight, volume issue three, but then there's also another volume one. It's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. That's a nice thing with these, is most of graphic medicine, as we conceive it right now, are standalone narratives. But
right.
I am looking forward to, I'm waiting for it to completely finish out the current Jane Foster run of Thor. That is, at its heart, I think, a cancer narrative, and I want to get that into the collection here, but I'm waiting for it to finish so I know the best way to buy it.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you were going to collect that one, or if there's anything else kind of mainstream-y that the storyline is medical-related enough that you would have it in the collection?
Well, so there's I think it's just blatantly called The Death of Captain Marvel is a big one that gets cited a lot. Fun Home is in the collection. Whether it's strictly medical is questionable, but that's a more commonly known. But with superheroes, it's kind of, there's not a whole lot that's been dove into yet with the medical. And I think there's a lot of room for it. So if you've got suggestions, or other people have been reading their favorite comics, I mean, see something medically relevant, throw it at me. I'm happy to collect it and, you know, give it a look.
Right. It's hard a lot of times in superhero comics, because there'll be some medical issue that will happen, and then an imp from a fifth dimension will come and fix it. And so you get the initial injury, maybe, but it's just kind of magically fixed all of a sudden.
And I mean, I've seen some studies where people are, you know, doing evaluations of how medicine or science are portrayed in mainstream comics, because that's a lot of people's entry point to understanding medicine and science. So if they're being portrayed poorly, we should probably know that and pay attention to it.
Yeah, well, because they had Barbara Gordon, Batgirl, who was in a wheelchair for 20-something years.
Yeah.
But then recently they just kind of snapped their fingers and reversed it. And so that's a good example I know from the disability community that they
as
an example. That she was a good role model, and then they decided they wanted Batgirl back, so they just changed her mind. So.
I think it's still ongoing. There's so many comics coming out that I struggle to keep track of the single issue schedule now. That's a great one too. But the most recent Mr. Miracle run, that's one I will absolutely be collecting for the collection here, as a look at trauma and mental health. And some recent issues have shown childbirth it's just a wealth of representation that I think would be great to have here for students to dive into.
Okay, well, all you listeners, think about it, and at the end of the show, we'll give Matthew's contact information, and you can let him know if you have anything else that you think you should have in the collection. Do you have any other favorite examples of graphic medicine?
Well, I've probably already named three of my usual big ones. Mom's Cancer. I think if there were, like, one comic in graphic medicine that almost everyone that's heavily involved in the field has read, it's going to be that one. It's by Brian Fees. Is the inaugural Eisner Award winner for a webcomic. Taking Turns, I mentioned, by M.K. Serwick. It's a unique mix of memoir, oral history, and ethnography is the way I tend to describe it, of the AIDS crisis in Chicago in a specific ward at a specific time. Rosalie Lightning is also one I usually mention. And it's one that I have trouble recommending to people because when I tell them what it's about, and you can see the emotion on my face when I describe it, it's about Tom Hart's grieving of the death of his young daughter. And people see me discuss it and they're like, I can't read that because it'll destroy me.
Right.
And it does, but I think that's why it's one of my favorite examples because I've read similar kind of stories in prose alone, and it didn't hit me quite as painfully. So I think something about the way he illustrated it in the grayscale just makes it super powerful.
Yeah, sometimes the imagery can really do that because I remember, I mean, that I don't know how it, well it holds up to time, but back when I was a kid in the 80s reading in the Fantastic Four, they actually had where the there was a miscarriage in the comic, and it was very well done. As I recall in my mind, again, who knows how it holds up, but and it was because it was visually, because it was like a silent page of them mourning over it, and like with a, like a big black boundary around it, and just that can really hit you, the art. So in a way that prose can do in a different way, but it's different. So.
I guess I'll mention one more and leave it at that for now. There's a series put out by Singing Dragon. It's a UK United Kingdom based press, and it's they're all called some blank is really strange. There's one on pain. There's one on anxiety. There's one on trauma, and these are closer to what we think of as floppy comics. They're about 32 pages. And they give an introduction and overview into these conditions, these health relevant issues that are difficult for people to see and understand if you don't experience it for yourself. And it goes into the physiology of them and then talks about how you can sort of manage those feelings. And they're kind of more on the educational comic bent. They've got citations on them, but they're a good example of, that how comics can be used in a purposely educational way. And I know I said I was only going to mention one more, but now that I'm thinking about it, let me make sure I have the exact name right. This new one that came out at the end of last year, it's called Lyssa. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. A story about medical promise, friendship, and revolution. It's actually an anthropology comic. It's from a new series that the Toronto University Press is doing called Ethnographic, with graphic in giant font, where they're publishing books about or publishing ethnographies as comic books. And this one in particular is about young girls who meet in Cairo and have they call it an unlikely friendship, and it spans across time, even when one of them moves back to the United States. She has a hereditary cancer gene, and she has to make decisions about how to deal with that. And it takes place during the Arab Spring and all of the chaos and change. And it's about bridging these cultures and this health crisis and how the culture influences these health decisions and the way you approach them. And it's a rare book where it's a comic that has an entire series of lesson plans in the back of it. Like the supplementary material is some like 50 pages of the book, and you could run a whole class with it. So I really love that, and it's a rare example that I hope we see more of.
And you mentioned that there was going to be a graphic medicine conference coming up.
Yeah, so this will be the eighth or ninth iteration of this conference. And it's called Comics and Medicine, The Ways We Work. So the theme of this year's conference is looking at how people do graphic medicine. And it's being held at the Center for Cartoon Studies. This is in White River Junction, Vermont. And it's being supported by the School of Medicine at Dartmouth as well, which is just over the river, in New Hampshire. And so this year there's going to be lots of speakers that are cartoonists talking about their process, why they come to graphic medicine and how they do it. There's also a lot of educators using comics in medical school, in, you know, public health. And there are actually, I've got the preliminary schedule pulled up here, a large number of sessions that are very relevant to librarians of all kinds. Because I think a lot of the pull this year for that is the National Library of Medicine launched a traveling exhibit program on graphic medicine. And this is, the exhibit is all booked up for like the next 4 years. So if your library hasn't already requested it, you can't get the physical version. The exhibit will be at the Comics and Medicine Conference, though, so you can see it there. But someone from NLM will be presenting at the conference on the development of this exhibit. Ellen Forney was the curator for the comic side of this exhibit. So it's got library and cartoonists working together to make it happen. There's a digital version of that exhibit where it's got like a lesson plan for a high school setting and for a college undergraduate setting. The undergrad one is about 8 weeks, so you could like run a small course using it. Even in the library, I think you could put together an offering to say, we're going to run this course once a week for 8 weeks. You should come do it. But the conference is in August 16th to 18th. Registration is open, so I encourage people to take a look and consider coming. If you do, give me a shout out. You know, I'm happy to chat libraries and comics anytime. I'll be there.
And the conference will be over by the time this comes out, but you're going to be at the Medical Library Association conference. Are you doing anything at that conference that will now be over by the people who hear this? But
well, yeah, you can hear about it in the past.
Yes.
So I'm doing a short 5-minute lightning talk at MLA about a class I taught while at UMass Medical School. It was on health literacy and comics. It was a week-long class in between third-year medical students' clinical rotations. So we did an introduction to health literacy. One of the co-teachers, another librarian, Len Levine, he did a role-playing exercise where one patient was literate, one person wasn't, and got the students really thinking about it. And then we threw comics into the mix and had them considering how comics could be used to bridge these health literacy gaps. So they read 3 comics. We did a book discussion on it. And their final project was they had to create a comic of their own. I'm big into this this theory that Linda Barry likes to use. You know, everyone can actually draw. It's just kind of beaten out of us as we grow older because you hit about 8 or 9 and the people who have a natural quote unquote talent for art get praised and everyone else is like, stop drawing and, you know, do something productive with your life.
Right, right.
So we try to revisit that in these kind of classes. So that was very successful. That's what we're presenting on at MLA. But we're also, for any medical librarians who are listening, launching a special interest group within MLA for the humanities and medicine. And it will include a lot of focus on graphic medicine because the 3 of us that are convening this special interest group all have an interest in graphic medicine. So,
and then the last thing I wanted to ask you about is you mentioned earlier before we were recording, not people don't think you're crazy for not remembering this, an annotated bibliography that you're working on that's through ALA.
Yes. So, there's 2 of us working on this, myself and Alice Yeagers. She's another medical librarian at the University of Arkansas Medical School. We put in an application for a Carnegie Whitney grant through ALA. This is a yearly grant that they award to people to create annotated bibliographies on a specific subject. So we submitted a proposal to do one on graphic medicine, what we're calling core, quote unquote, graphic medicine. I'm really leery of canonizing graphic medicine because, as I mentioned, I come to it with the hope that it gets multiple perspectives out there on these conditions. So I don't want to necessarily elevate ones above the other.
Right.
With that said, there are ones that are more widely read and studied and acknowledged that I think are important for every library to consider having. And so that's what we're looking at with this annotated bibliography project. So we're going to, you know, break it down by healthcare topic and list titles and justifications for why you should have them. We're just getting started on this. The grant awards went out, you know, in April. So this is a longer term look, but I have a link you can put in the show notes if you want to a couple of lists that might be useful for getting started in advance of us actually finishing this annotated bibliography. The caveat with those is they include things that are clearly not going to be orderable, like some zines, some web comics, some things that are out of print.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure how you deal with web comics in a library catalog sense if there's no print edition of it. I know we can put things in, but it's like, I don't know, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, it's something I'm still brainstorming on. There are as many print comics, published comics as we have for medical genre, there are even more than that online. And it's hard to collect them all in one place and make them accessible. I think the short-term, simpler solution is probably going to be finding someone who's willing to sit down and like maintain a list with working links,
right,
and host it somewhere. That has yet, to my knowledge, happened, but it's something that should be considered.
Yeah, and I know that's a much broader issue of how do we catalog and archive the internet, basically.
I am in no way a cataloger.
All right, Matthew, thank you so much for being on the show today. If people wanted to get in touch with you to give you some more recommendations or anything else, how can they get in touch with you?
The easiest way is actually probably Twitter. I tweet far too often for my own sanity. You can find me on there at Know the Matt. That's NoeTheMatt. Little play on my name. If my last name is going to be No, I'm going to use it. You can also shoot me an email. I'm pretty regular with responding to those, and it's Matthew, MATTHEW _ Noe, NOE, at hms.harvard.edu.
All right, well, thank you so much, Matthew.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Circulating Ideas is produced by Steve Thomas in the suburbs of Atlanta, with support from listeners like you. Find out how you can help by going to circulatingideas.com and clicking on support. You can also subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Overcast, or your podcast app of choice. And help others find the show by leaving a rating or review. You can follow the show on Twitter at Circ Ideas or like the show's Facebook page. Music is by Pamela Klicka. Thanks for listening and keep circulating your ideas.
It's hard to get anything done when everyone wants to meet constantly.
give me some progress on your project. I haven't been able to work on it. I've been meeting the whole time in the meantime.
Yep.
Since our last meeting, I've been meeting. So.